I installed the Q beta on like a device I actually use daily, and oh boy, those gestures are, they're designed to be pretty, I think, rather than functional, is like my overarching opinion of them after a week.
Oh yeah, they're definitely broken right now. I couldn't stay on beta on my Pixel 3 XL. It's rough.
It's flashy. It's like this where the app icon briefly like flashes in and flashes out as you open and close an app. It's designed to look pretty, and I think it speaks to the criticism of Google just copying Apple, because that's where the trend of gestural navigation is going to, and Google themselves not having a complete well thought out idea on how to do this. Anyway, yeah. That may not be true, but that's what it looks like from the outside, given how Apple moved first.
There is one thing I will say feels a little bit copied, and that, like, one of the things that I just love about gestural navigation on the iPhone is just the physics of the swiping up, the swiping, if that makes sense. Like, the physics of the animation, whenever you're in an app and you swipe up from the bottom to go back to the home screen, the physics of how that looks, like it kind of has a little bit of a, like, it's kind of like revolving around a planet or something, you know what I mean? Like, whenever, you know, it's like on a rubber band, if that makes sense. Like, it flings up and then it kind of lands and you know, you land on the home screen, and the screen of the app that you're currently in just slowly morphs into the app icon itself, which is really clever, and it's really clean. And I think that Google has essentially one for one copied Apple's implementation of that exact, I guess, design. So that's one thing that I do think it's a little bit fair to criticize Google on.
Well, I do have my favorite aspects of the gestural navigation is being able to swipe left and right to go back, the left and right edges to go back, and I find myself constantly doing that on this Pixel 3a, and it's a good idea, but I would honestly prefer gesture navigation with the pill that exists currently on the Pixel 3 and other devices. I like the pill. I think it's iconic. It's for being a year old, it's iconic, and it was something that Google originated. They did themselves originally. So
I don't know. For me, I would just like it if they just copy the iPhone version completely. I really, really like that ability to just swipe on the bottom. I don't know what you call it, pill, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's
swipe on the bottom to quickly switch between apps.
Compared to iOS and the iPhone X, it's a much thinner and smaller pill, correct? And shorter?
Yeah, it's definitely narrower. Thinner and shorter. Yeah, narrower. For sure. Not that is really consequential at all for...
Not at all.
...how it's used and stuff, but anyways... What?
Aesthetically, it seems like a bug. It seems like a
rendering
bug.
It does kind of look like a bug, yeah, I agree. I guess we can jump into Huawei stuff. Speaking of, I guess, Google devices, this is my great segue. the Nexus 6P, which, interestingly, our Seth, the very first thing he thought about whenever this story broke about Huawei no longer being able to use Android, he said, what's the consequence for the Nexus 6P? And my first initial reaction was, there isn't one, because who uses a 6P?
It's done.
And yeah, it's done. It's definitely end of life, as they say.
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, it's obviously not getting software updates or anything, and so I mean that was really the only possible concern with the Nexus 6P. However, there was apparently a concern that I wasn't even, or no one was really even thinking about or conceiving as possible, and that is the Android Enterprise device list, which is devices that Google officially sanctions as safe to use in the enterprise. Is that basically what it is?
Yeah, it's just an easy list for companies to check before buying in bulk.
Right. And apparently the Nexus 6P for some reason was on that list before this whole ban dropped and it was removed from that list. So obviously the Nexus 6P didn't have any implications, or there were no implications for the Nexus 6P or for Nexus 6P owners with this whole thing, but it still was something that came up. So.
Yeah. So Huawei from a week ago, the relations are still weird, I would say, in that it's not, in that what's actually was surprising was the fact that Huawei was being let back into these. Okay, first Huawei was removed from several standards organizations, like the people responsible for the SD cards, and now they're back. And
yeah,
it's either because of course the extension, which at as long as this 90-day extension is still in effect, there will be no real consequences in terms of devices still working and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's only going to ramp up or ultimately tone down as this situation develops, this clearly political situation and legal situation keeps going on.
Yeah, there's kind of two things happening here. There's one, the immediate implications of this, of Huawei being added to the Department of Commerce's entity list. That has direct implications, and it seems to be that has been, I guess, stayed for the next 90 days. Which means that a lot of the things that happened, like devices disappearing from online lists, such as the Huawei Mate 20 Pro, which was removed from the Android Q beta page, a lot of these little minor implications are being walked back. Like you mentioned, so the SD Alliance or whatever said, you know, originally on the record that Huawei was officially kicked out, basically, and now they're saying, oh, well, we reinstated them. And yeah, other little things I don't know if the Wi-Fi Alliance has let them back in or whatever the case is. You know, there's now a 90-day stay on that ban, essentially, which means I think a lot of these little minor things just got walked back immediately. You know, after the round of really negative doom and gloom press. But the other thing to think about, and the other thing that's going on here, is the long-term implications. What happens after 90 days, and not only that, what things are not being walked back, because it would be silly to, because once this 90 days delay or whatever is up, you know, there's still going to be major implications for Huawei. We've been having these conversations about what this means for Huawei as a business, that they won't be able to use Android anymore, and what does that look like for their ability to sell phones in Europe, and what does that look like for their ability to push updates to existing devices, and all these other implications that presumably, well, it seems to be that this 90-day delay thing doesn't really change those conversations, because those are longer-term conversations. It's not about membership of an organization, which can easily be reinstated, or removing a device from a list of supported devices online. You know, there's still a lot of question marks as to what this will mean for Huawei in the long term.
Yeah. Yep. So I feel like we're going to have a Huawei section for quite a long time, for the next 8 weeks.
Yeah, one of the really interesting things that happened this week was yet another Huawei statement on what's going to happen with its OS. So for those that don't matter, or for those that don't know, one of the big question marks with this whole ordeal is, what is Huawei going to do if they can't use Android? Are they going to launch their own operating system in the US? I mean, on the US, in China? Are they going to have it ready this fall, which is what Huawei CEO told Chinese media? Is it probably pretty far away off, and going to be really challenging to do in the United States, or impossible to do in the United States? That's what Huawei CEO told the information. And then some of the information's original reporting is that this OS is nowhere near being ready. There's also the question of what, which OS, and are there more than one OS projects that might be being conflated here? There's Project Z, so to speak, which is what the information seemingly had sources talking about, and then Hong Meng, which is seems to be the code name for and one of their operating systems. It's the one that Huawei's willing to recognize on the record. Whatever the case is, you know, there have been lots of mixed reports, and then this week we got yet another report about what Huawei was going to do and when they were going to do it, and this came from a random Huawei representative out of the Middle East. They probably don't have a job anymore, you think?
That's bad.
But they apparently told TechRadar on the record that not only was Huawei anticipating this banhammer to drop and that they would have to move away from Android, but that they have been preparing this operating system for quite some time and that it is launching, quote, next month, which next month is in 2 days. And it was just hilarious to see this headline because it was just so easy to see right through from the get-go. And we wrote about it and we published and wrote that, you know, hey, this is it may seem crazy, but it's still an on the record statement from an official representative of the company, and therefore we have to give it some weight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we wrote about it, but obviously not unexpectedly, like 20 minutes later, Huawei came out and said, no, that is not what's happening at all. So yeah, what do you think about this whole ordeal? What do you think about Huawei just being Huawei when it comes to
Huawei
messaging? Yeah,
it's such a hard line to balance. I don't think it's an overstatement to say that the future of the company is at stake here, in terms
sure.
of hardware, in terms of having an operating system, all that is at stake, and I think they'll do whatever they can to turn around their fortunes. It's key to the Chinese economy, even so. And again, like, there are many, many people with Huawei devices, and they have promised to keep supporting them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if the company fails, that incentive to support just goes down. The promises of future support, they just disappear. So it's...
Yeah, I think the biggest implication is if they're going to even be able to sell phones in very, very important markets at all, much less support them, are they going to be able to sell phones in Europe at all? It doesn't, as of right now, that's still up in the air. There's definitely no clear answer on that,
and
I don't think.
Another thing to look at is whether their reputation has been permanently damaged. Sure, they could get back the trade.
Yeah, for Western buyers.
Yeah. What happens if the trade war ends and a deal is signed? Do European consumers go in and see a Huawei device and think, what happens if there's another conflict? Will support suddenly stop? I wonder what the damage to the Huawei brand is at this point, because at the end of the day, people that aren't really in the know, they see Huawei, they see allegations of spying, trade war, no updates, support, that kind of thing, and they just
to mention the just American connotation of China being negative.
Yes,
that's a problem that all Chinese companies have, I think.
Yeah.
And thankfully though for Huawei, you know, they don't really have much brand to, not much of their brand can be hurt in the United States, because. Mm. In the United States, there's essentially nothing. The Huawei Watch,
yes. Honor, maybe
Honor, kind of. Although I think that's detached enough to where people don't know that they're at all related.
Nope.
I can't think of hardly anything Huawei branded that American consumers, would even be aware of. Huawei's not even. It's one of those crazy things that just talking to normal Americans, you know. It's just crazy how big Huawei is and how few Americans have even heard of them.
Absolutely.
And it's like the same, you can't say the same thing about, you know, a Chinese citizen's awareness of Apple.
Yeah.
You know, Chinese citizens are very well aware of Apple's existence, and it would be kind of like that if if we didn't know of the Chinese apple. And most Americans don't. So I guess there's nothing for Huawei to lose here.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of Huawei's future, the Mate X is definitely one of those things that, you know, it might have been a good opportunity for Huawei to enter the U.S. market.
Yes.
Should all of this not have hit the fan.
Yeah. The Huawei Mate X is their foldable. It's their Audi fold. I think that's the part.
Audi.
Audi.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we came up with all these terms and now we're just having to like put them in the, you know, just put them on the back burner for a year.
I guess. Yeah. So some backstory. That last week the device was removed from the official Android.com as a list of flagship devices that they trumpet as extending the Android OS platform. And the Mate X and the 30 Pro was on that list, but then it was removed because of the obvious conflicts. And so that throws into question whether this phone is launching. It's supposed to launch next month. Very soon. And
yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah.
And I think a big implication of that is that Samsung is now under far less pressure to be first to market with a foldable. I think Samsung could just sit around for the next 12 months and still be Huawei to market with the fold, in my opinion. Well, obviously in the United States, but even elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, that had pretty significant implications this week, we think. I mean, there's no direct connection between what happened, but it might be. There might be some factor of the Mate X being, you know, delayed or canceled, effectively, on pre-orders for the Galaxy Fold, which Best Buy canceled this week, officially. So, I mean, I guess the original plan was Best Buy and all these other retailers were going to keep their pre-orders in place. But they just had to send, I think it's like FTC or whatever regulation that they, after the device was delayed, they had to send notifications to customers saying, hey, this device is delayed. Would you like to keep your pre-order? And obviously Best Buy did that and AT&T did that. Verizon did that or not. I don't know. Whatever the carriers were. Yeah. And obviously many customers were probably like, yeah, it's only going to be a month. So they just clicked yes. But it seems like Best Buy's pulling out on that. And it seems like they're going to, they did. They canceled all the pre-orders. So that does not bode well for the Galaxy Fold being available anytime soon.
So it's
not to mention, yeah, go what's up?
I was just going to say, it's Android's premier foldables, these saw a mention at I.O. as one of the headlining features of Q.
Right.
And it makes you think of how much effort Google presumably put into making foldables because all these OEMs were starting to make devices. Was it warranted for them to put all this much effort into a feature that isn't launching for, I don't know, the next year? It's all kind of gone to waste for Google.
Yeah, I don't think the work has gone to waste, but the timing is definitely bad.
Yeah.
Or it turned out to be bad.
Yeah.
For more than one reason, clearly. Another thing is the Galaxy Fold. What was the other Galaxy Fold headline this week? What was it? Forgot. There was something else that happened with the Galaxy Fold. I could have sworn there was something else. I'm sure Ben is watching the podcast right now and yelling at me through the screen because he was the one that wrote this.
That there were other design choices. It won't be ready until July.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, you know, it wasn't Ben. It was Damien. The Korea Herald, according to a report this week, said that the Galaxy Fold is definitely not happening in June. So that was one of the original.
Yes.
And not happening in June. There was a lot of assumption that it would happen in June because, you know, I think Samsung's messaging said, we're just going to fix this up real quick and then we'll get it out. And
nobody's
definitely not happening.
That was happening. The amount.
Well, I mean, they were supposed to announce the new release date by the end of this month, and the end of this month is tomorrow. And you know, if it was already about to launch in, you know, like a month ago, then you would have thought that they'd be ready to launch it within a month ish of the new announcement of the release date. If that makes sense. Yes. I like that. That's kind of how I read it.
No, definitely. I read it the same way, but from like a practical standpoint, it's hard. You don't fix hardware in such a short time span compared to software, obviously. But I just never saw that timeline as realistic of them hitting it on time. So, yeah, that device.
So, yeah, that's what's happening with Huawei this week. And as you mentioned, we'll probably have more and more on that in the coming weeks. I don't like talking about it much, so I would prefer not to. But we will. We will. Next up, speaking of Samsung, Samsung's Galaxy Note 10, which is coming this year, as they do, is apparently going to launch without any buttons on it at all. And I guess what you like to call solid state.
Yes. So there was this rumor from Android Priest this morning about the Note 10 dropping the headphone jack. We can talk about that later. And dropping all buttons. This include, they cited the volume button, the power button, the Bixby button, RIP, but not really. And replacing it with either capacitive or touch-sensitive buttons. And in place of where the buttons would be, it would be like a ridge or just some like physical marker so that users know where to press, but presumably vibration would be providing the counter feedback. And so the end result you have is this completely this buttonless device that there are obvious benefits in terms of design, starting with waterproofing. The point of ingress is so much more limited to the power, the USB-C, and just the screen. And two, as David pointed out from AP, those cutouts on the frames of the devices are the weakest points for the unibody frame. If a phone were to bend, that's where it starts, at those points where the unibody metal frames have been cut so thin to allow for the buttons. So by removing those structural weaknesses, it's a clear benefit. And of course, the second one is buttons break. The mechanisms can jam, stuff can get lodged in and all that, and you're just removing.
Although that's not exactly a primary complaint with smartphones.
No,
I don't think.
No, definitely. But I would
say that's not even like the top 20 things that people complain about.
But
my buttons break too much.
But I'd like to make the point that as phones are lasting longer and longer beyond 2 year cycles, 3, 4, 5, and especially like a Galaxy Note, they just pack it with RAM and a powerful processor. I think when you're designing for 5 years out, you want to get rid of all points where damage is possible. And I think this is a good approach for them.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the home button on the iPhone was actually a big problem for some people for a while.
Yeah.
It was actually, I think Apple said at one point that it was their number one serviced component or something. Yeah. Of one of the iPhones before they went to solid state with the iPhone 7, I believe.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, there's definitely some value to that. I wonder what they're going to do to actually provide some kind of feedback though to the users to know when they're pressing buttons. Is it going to only be on screen? Are you only going to be able to tell whenever you tap a button and you see, you know, the volume slider at the top of the screen come down and change volume? Or is there going to be some kind of like physical feedback that you'll feel? I would love, honestly, if all phones could just replace physical buttons with some taptic engine type response.
Taptic engine quality
and
level.
Actually, yeah. And I actually did, after David wrote about this, I did a little looking into a rumor that came out in summer of last year that the Apple Watch Series 4 was going to be the first Apple Watch to go completely solid state.
I'm aware of this.
Which I was like, that sounds awesome. And apparently, you know, the digital crown and the power button were both going to be just solid buttons and use the Taptic Engine for, I guess, simulating the press. Obviously, that didn't pan out.
So, yeah.
You think that's a Series 5 thing?
So this was a Fast Company report that they apparently have a source in Apple's design lab. And the end goal of the Apple Watch design is to move buttons to... so the digital crown is something that scrolls. So the idea would to be users able to swipe on the edge to like move around, to move up and down menus, that kind of thing. And the arguments for why are the same with any phone, with the Note 10 we just discussed earlier. It makes for a cleaner body, it makes for less entrances and less points to break.
And that's, I think, are actually a bigger deal for the Apple Watch than any of the iPhones, for sure. I think the Apple Watch has much more delicate moving parts.
And the space constraints, you want every single...
Sure. Yeah, that's absolutely a factor, too. And I will say, though, I think that they've managed to make them pretty reliable, because I haven't, you know, there's not been any widespread concern about breakage on those, I don't think.
So yeah.
That's interesting. It's interesting to see. Maybe this will be the year of solid state. I mean, we saw, what was that Chinese phone?
Yeah, that was a Chinese phone.
I forgot who it was, but this was done this year already, I think. I'm not gonna look it up, but some Android OEM actually did this, and it the buttonless phone. I think there were actually more than one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's two.
So maybe that's the trend this year. Maybe we'll see a solid state haptic based button trend.
So the thing with Samsung is they would just leave the USB-C port, and while not officially solid state, though, then again the USB-C port doesn't move. But
yeah,
well, Samsung has been a big adopter in fast wireless charging. Their chargers have fans in them. That's kind of insane if you really think about it. Their wireless chargers have whirring fans to keep the heat down. To replicate fast charges. But yeah, that is the USB-C port is obviously the next thing to go once.
I've long been saying that 2022 is the year that the iPhone ditches all ports and buttons.
2022. So
if this Note 10 report is true, then this is one of the very first one of the first major flagships to do this.
Oh, which, if you think about it, that's not too surprising in terms of Samsung did bigger phones first before Apple, and if that's the trend that the industry is moving to.
Sure, I will say the Note is a weird one to do it with, given its history with supporting styluses.
Yeah, that's...
So it's like, it doesn't benefit the water ingress with that huge stylus hole.
Yeah, you have this entire... this blank, empty compartment where you just have to leave a gigantic hole. So yeah, that's a bit odd, but
yeah,
it's a Note. You have to keep the marquee feature of that phone.
What? Anyways, headphone jack. This is going to be the first Samsung flagship that finally moves on from the headphone jack.
Yeah,
which I guess we can shout out Kellen at Droid Life, who wrote a story just today, just before this story dropped, asking if the headphone jack is back, to which I replied, Betteridge's Law of Headlines, which, for those that don't know, is that any story or any article written with a question mark at the end of the headline, the answer is no. And just coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, David reported 20 minutes later that... in fact, one of the most important Android flagships is getting rid of the headphone jack.
Yeah, so. It's the response, end user response to this has been as expected. The enthusiast response, rather, has been quite upset. And
yep,
to the defense, I would say, the Note is a really, really big phone.
you would think they could fit it in.
Well, it's not about fitting. It has never been about fitting.
Apple made the case that they can do a bigger battery.
I think the most honest answer is selling proprietary wireless headphones. I think that's the most honest answer to this question. And the AirPods have sold pretty darn well, so it's working.
If you really want to do it, maybe you should include it in the box. All these companies, gigantic, massive companies, should include their wireless headphones in the box. Samsung's doing it at the Galaxy Fold. $2,000. But yeah.
Anyhow.
I'm kind of excited about this phone because of this, the fact there's no buttons. I hate buttons because they break and they feel weird and they feel quicky and they just sound weird.
Yeah, at Google I.O., you were not a fan of my Pixel 3 buttons at all.
No, I was not. And yeah, it's... they break. Why wouldn't you want something that's just secured for the future and can't possibly break? That has been my longest argument.
Anything can break.
That's a problem. Anything can break.
The thing is, though, is that, like, you know, if there is something to be said for modularity. And modularity doesn't necessarily mean, you know, phone blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Phone blocks or ARA. That's not necessarily what I mean. I mean, like, having parts that are removable and replaceable is... there's something to be said for that,
yeah.
I think. And if you make something... I mean, it's like, sure, the fact that there's less moving parts on a MacBook today is benefit for parts not breaking. But the fact that it's all super, super unibody and it really costs Apple like $1,000 to replace a single key on the keyboard. You know, this is one argument against quote-unquote solid-state designs. And for all we know, moving this direction could make the Galaxy Note 10 less repairable than previous generations.
Definitely. Like, the end goal of all these phones is that it's permanently sealed. Like,
one permanent piece of glass.
I'm down with that.
Sandwich on metal. I'm down with it too from a design standpoint.
Yeah, but for my user-friendliness, it's... nah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also something to be said for, you know, when it comes to repairability, the environmental impact. I think that's something that we don't think about enough.
Yeah.
That there is something good and altruistic about having devices that last a long time and don't have to be thrown away or recycled if one component breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And the Note 10 moving toward a buttonless single slab design is definitely a move in that direction of being less recyclable, I think.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I digress.
Yeah.
What's going on with Assistant this week?
The Assistant, so the Google portion of our show, which is it's the third topic down this week. So, I guess the biggest Assistant news is what Amazon did with the Echo Show 5, which is... Show 5 is such a weird name. In that you can put numbers on your products when there's like a clear lineage that people can associate with, but I don't think that even Echo fans are aware of what was the third Echo and that kind of stuff. But anyways, it's $90. It's a cheaper version of the Echo Show, which is more akin to the Nest Hub. And it's what do you think of the design? I think it's kind of cute. Small.
I have not given it any mind space.
Any mind space.
So I don't have any. I have no thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it and then I thought there is no case in which this should be purchased instead of a Google Home Hub on sale.
Yeah, on sale is the key.
Or on Swappa. You know, you can buy a brand new Google Home Hub on Google Home Hub, Nest Hub, whatever.
Yeah.
On Swappa right now for $90. So,
yeah.
I think Google should just make all of these home devices free.
Yeah, remember that point about somebody said that Google should give every single person a Home Mini?
Every person on Earth?
Yeah.
All 7 billion?
Basically. All Google account owners should be able to redeem a free home device.
It's not far off from what has actually happened.
No, like,
because there's so many.
It's
so many opportunities.
Yeah, it's physically not hard to get a home device at this point. It's, you get it with free stuff all the time as a free thing all the time. So yeah, so this Echo Show device, I think it's safe to say that the while Echo and Alexa are able to win the first the smart speaker generation devices, Google has is similarly owning the device world, the device generation of these smart home devices. So, but again, yeah, competition helps.
To answer your question, I don't think it looks nice.
Okay. It's nice in the way that small things are cute.
Yeah, I just think that Google has absolutely nailed it with these friendly, homey fabrics and stuff.
Yes.
And although the Echo has gotten closer to that over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Echo family has gotten closer to that. They're still all just black.
Yeah.
Or gray. And it's like, I think that the really friendly, I guess, vaguely colored colors.
Yeah, yeah.
the purple-ish and the kind of blue and the, you know, all these, like the very subtle reds and teals and stuff, all these colors that they're using for these devices, they're just so nice to look at, in my opinion.
Let me amend.
And they definitely fit in with the Scandinavian
design.
IKEA.
I still think Google should buy IKEA, but that's another tangent for another day. It's a point of present. Okay, never mind. Let me amend my statement.
No, that actually might be really smart. Or at least Google could have a showroom at IKEA.
Yeah, a deep partnership where every single piece of furniture has an assistant button and a speaker. Who knows?
This might be the best brand synergy idea ever, I think.
Yeah, IKEA. Yeah, anyways, I just want to amend my statement about the Echo Show 5 looking nice. I think the shape is nicer. I've never been in love with the base and the screen attached on the Home Mini and now on the Home Hub, on the Nest Hub and the Nest Hub Max. I've never liked the shape physically. Of course, it doesn't matter because you're just looking at the screen. But I kind of prefer how the Echo Show devices look in terms of the shape. There's a larger, more substantial base almost. So that's my minor aside on that.
Yeah, I like the smaller footprint with the docked display tablet thing. I really like it.
Yeah, the docked. That's, I don't know. I've never fallen in love with that. But yes, that in other assistant news this week, specifically home control, assistant devices can now control your GE connected microwaves, which I want to make a segue about a demand, really, that somebody make a smart kettle. A trusted brand makes a smart kettle that can be controlled by assistant. And can be used to turn on every single day in the morning, so you have a fresh boiling hot water. That's just my demand, because there are not too many right now, and the brands
you
that
could
do a smart
you could do an Alexa microwave and just put water in a mug and put it in there and schedule it for a certain time in the morning.
That's true. That's fair.
That's an option.
That's an option. But yeah, so the rest of this week's assistant news is more focused on the phone. So last week, the new Google Lens with filters announced at I/O started rolling out. But as of this week, officially, it is widely rolling out to all devices. So you get these four new filters of dining, of shopping, of translation, and of copying text. It's coming out to Android and iOS, with iOS being the Google app, not the Google Assistant app, which I always find quite odd, and Google Photos. So again, as many point out this week, lens isn't a highly used feature, but at the same time, it is the future in terms of how we interact with our smart devices. And I think it's highly critical to see where Google takes lens and how far they advance it to the point where it becomes a useful utility. And that's my two cents on lens, and one day becoming very, very useful.
One day.
One day. Yes, one day.
As of now, I still haven't used it a single time this month.
Yeah, it has a long road for it. And I guess the other major news is being able to use Google Pay and Assistant to pay for your subway rides, which I believe the rest of the world has this for ages, and it's now starting to more widely populate in the US. But being able to use your phone to pay for transit is one recipe.
We're so far behind.
We're so far behind. Yeah.
Yeah, every time I take BART, and I mean, I don't live there, so I just buy one single ride tickets, and I can't just scan my phone. It feels so archaic.
You have to stand by the machine. It prints you out the physical card, which is weird. But yeah.
Put in physical cash.
Yes. But yeah.
Anyways, I think we should talk about this health ban thing.
Yes.
That's probably our third big tentpole topic of today that we have neglected a lot. And you wrote the story earlier this week, and it's really interesting for a lot of different reasons. For one, it's a hardware product that Google Hardware made in conjunction with ATAP that we did not know about, or I would say 99% of people didn't know existed.
Absolutely not.
So tell us about it.
So in April, Google Hardware, starting in 2018, Google Hardware has been Google Design, whatever, their hardware portion, has been trying to get its brand out. So they've been going to this design conference in Milan and making an installation, an art exhibit. For 2019, they decided to do this furniture thing. So they set up three rooms with furniture, with Google Home, smart devices, Nest devices, that kind of stuff. And participants are meant to walk through, enjoy the space. But they wear this band, this health band, that can track these four metrics, like heart rate, like your skin, galvanic response, your movement, just that kind of stuff. And at the end of the exhibit, after you walk through these three rooms, Google pulls the data from that band, and it tells you which room you're most comfortable in. So that's the basic premise of this exhibit. But of course, the most interesting thing is this band that, as you said, Google Hardware made to track these responses. When Google officially announced this exhibit, they really did not touch on this band. It was the second to last paragraph where they said, we created a specially made band just for this exhibit. And to me, it always seemed odd that you spent all this time just to make this piece of hardware, which is hard, for a one-shot exhibit in April that you're going to use once and that's it. It's not even a traveling exhibit or anything like that. So, I always felt it was odd, and then the week before, we saw this device pass to the FCC, which only has Bluetooth, which has a companion app. And I just couldn't break this connection of this health ban that Google announced in April with Matt lines up so well with this Bluetooth-only device that has no screen.
Yeah, my only pushback on that is that there's an infinite number of possible things that we can't imagine that Google could have made.
Yeah.
That could also be this device. Although it is very clearly based on the numbering scheme or whatever, likely to be a consumer made by Google product. Would you say that?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's
so Yeah. So, I mean, there's a little bit of evidence that it's something more than just some random internal Google product or something.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen Google's Bluetooth headphones, for example.
It's very odd.
Like, Google's internal headphones go through and saw pictures of them, or it's really easy to raise an eyebrow at that and be like, you know, this is never something Google would ever sell. And it's because it wasn't. And so there's obviously the possibility that this is something like that. And another weird thing is the timing of it. Usually if something's going to launch made by Google and it's going to come later this year at their hardware event, which is where they launch almost everything that they launch.
Yeah.
It usually passes through the FCC like a month before.
Yeah.
Around, and we're obviously still pretty far away. So if this is something that Google plans to sell, then that general timing would suggest that it would maybe launch in the next month or two.
Yeah.
But there's no clear, I guess, signal of anything launching in the next couple months, unless there's something that has to do with Stadia that we don't know about.
Isn't the Stadia controller? Which,
something that has to do with Stadia that has only Bluetooth and no screen and a companion app.
Yeah,
I don't know. And the other thing, companion app could be very vague, you know, like if it were the Stadia controller, which we know it's not because the Stadia controller has Wi-Fi. You know, if it were that, you know, they could say companion app, but that could just mean
the Stadia app. Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, this is a health tracker with a specific app made specifically for it. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a good thought, I think, but I just don't think there's any evidence yet that there's really any tangible connection between that FCC filing and this health band tracker.
Yeah.
Although they do seem to fit. If that's what it ends up being, it wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing here with this whole story is that we could actually tell you.
Sure.
Sorry, excuse me, bless me. We can actually tell you that this is, whether or not this band that we've seen at this art exhibit / experiment that they did in April becomes a real product that Google sells, we can say pretty confidently that it is actually indicative of something else that Google will be launching. That's all we could say, is that the answer to Abner's headline of, is this just for a one-off art project? The answer is no. Does that mean that this exact device is being launched and sold? Not necessarily, but it could mean that this test was
success.
Testing prototype hardware for, you know, some evolution of this could actually come to consumers when Made by Google rolls around later this year. So we'll be tracking that for sure.
Yeah. And again, the timeline, of course, not many people expected there to be a hardware announcement at I.O., but between now and October and early October, there is no clear window for Google to do a launch besides Stadia.
Yeah, and speaking of Stadia, actually, this week, Google confirmed on the Stadia Twitter account that pricing, launch titles, and other details are coming this summer. So this summer, at some point, presumably around E3, I don't know, that would be the most obvious guess.
Yeah, that'd be 2 weeks, and we haven't had any inklings yet.
Some more information on Stadia is coming. So who knows, maybe there's other Stadia hardware. Maybe there's a Stadia headset or something like that that is...
Yeah.
In the works, going to be launched this summer or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But yeah, it's health. It's promising. It's very promising.
Yeah. In other Google hardware news, I guess we can talk about Pixel Slate a little bit, because it's 6 months from Pixel Slate. And I really wish that I had gotten my follow-up review up before the show, because it would be perfect time to talk about it. But I've had an iPad. You can actually see my box right there. For those that are watching the video stream,
you were covering.
I've had an iPad Pro for a couple weeks now, just comparing side by side with The Pixel Slate.
Yes.
And I'm going to write my review on the Pixel Slate, my 6 month review. I already wrote my first review, my 6 month review from the perspective of someone who's used the iPad Pro for a couple weeks. And also from the perspective, apparently now, of someone that can buy the i5 Pixel Slate at $200 cheaper than you could before.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two factors that I'll be considering when I do my second review. And the $200 price drop, I'm not sure if that makes much difference. Yeah. Unfortunately,
it's $599 is still a lot for a product.
With the $200 price drop, we are now at where it should have been when it launched. Yes. In my opinion,
and maybe even
the Celeron model should not have existed, and the M3 should have started at $599. That's where we should have been.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, that's not where it was. And I don't think that Google dropping the price now by $200 is going to help anything with Pixel Slate's momentum. So
unfortunately, or fortunately,
I think the Pixel Slate needs to just be drugged through the mud as much as possible so that maybe Google makes a good tablet.
And just saying, this Pixel Slate deal ends on June 6th. It's not a permanent thing. There is an expiration date
for
this
sure.
deal.
For
so.
Sure. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
A lot of times these things have expiration dates and then they just get extended. But
yeah.
But I mean, I've talked about this all the time, but the big problem with the Pixel Slate is not really the Pixel Slate, although the hardware is definitely lackluster compared to the iPad Pro.
Yeah.
Now that I've used the iPad Pro with its wirelessly charging, magnetically attachable Apple Pencil, which is just wizardry. It's so awesome. just that alone is just like, it just makes the Pixel Slate kind of embarrassing from a hardware engineering perspective. The iPad Pro has much smaller bezels, really nice rounded corners on the OLED display, you know, the 120 hertz refresh rate. Like, it's just such a good experience, in my opinion. Not the Pixel Slate is terrible, but on the hardware side of things, Pixel Slate's a little bit behind, which is unfortunate. About a year behind, I would say. But I would say the biggest problem with the Pixel Slate is not the hardware, although it does have that as a downside. I think the biggest problem is, drumroll please, iPad apps, or not iPad apps, tablet apps on Android.
Yeah.
So, and that's been a problem, and it will probably never not be a problem.
Yeah.
Because I don't ever see that ecosystem ever recovering.
Yeah, like your best chance is just web apps designed for bigger screens and friendlier touch targets, and that isn't an ideal solution at the end of the day, but it's...
There's no real good solution for tablet apps on the Pixel Slate.
Yeah.
The Android tablet experience is pretty bad, and the Chrome OS tablet experience is pretty bad. And just running Android apps on Chrome OS doesn't solve the problem. It solves the problem, I think, for devices like the Pixelbook, which are intended to be used as like with a mouse and keyboard. If it's intended to be used with a mouse and keyboard primarily, then having those Android apps run windowed on screen is not too bad, because they run at similar rate screen or display ratios as Android phones, and so you don't need good apps because they just run in small versions like they would on your Android phone. And you just click around them with a mouse. And in the case of the Pixelbook, you can tap them, or other Chromebooks, you can tap them with your finger, which is a great experience, I think. But the problem with the Pixel Slate is that you detach the keyboard, and the tablet mode using the Pixel Slate as a tablet is just awful. Mm. It's just awful. Not to mention the whole lag with the multitasking thing that people have been dealing with, but just whenever you open up Android apps on the Pixel Slate, they're forced into full screen. And when you're using full screen Android apps on a huge display, whether it be a built for Android tablet like a Galaxy Tab or this, it doesn't make a difference. You're still running blown up Android apps that the developers have not spent 5 minutes optimizing for a tablet experience. And on the iOS side of things, developers do spend a little time making sure that their apps look great on tablets, because not all of them, but many of them, because the iPad is a successful platform. So
yeah.
Anyways, I'll have more of those thoughts, all those thoughts, and much, much more coming with my follow-up 6-month review on the Pixel Slate. So,
yep.
That's that. Yeah. Also, we have some Pixel 3 things. The Pixel 3a got a durability test from our friend Jerry Rigg, and he showed it's fine.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Nothing special. I thought it was going to. Because if you remember, the Nexus 5X was notoriously horrible for snapping because it had a plastic body. And this fared quite better. I'm honestly surprised that it didn't snap in half, that it, he wasn't able to snap it in half.
Yeah. And then Google, actually, another really interesting thing that happened this week, the Pixel 3, many suspected digital well-being as a culprit for Pixel 3 slowdown issues. And Google came out, and this is very rare of them to do this, they came out and publicly debunked it and said, nope, we've done internal testing on digital well-being and it is not causing any problems with performance on Pixel 3. So this is just one of many, many examples where anecdotes cannot be trusted.
Yes, but I assure you it's not going any time soon. And we're going to be living with this myth for years to come.
Although Google did say that they found some other things that were causing performance issues and that they'll be rolling fixes out soon. So if you're a Pixel 3 owner with some lag problems, keep an eye out for the next incremental update.
Yeah.
Is that the show?
That's
we're good. we don't have anything major happening this week. We have no idea what's going to happen. We couldn't do this podcast on Wednesday yesterday because I had tornadoes in the area and it was just really, really loud. Also, I have some foam that's being delivered. So if you have been annoyed by the, I guess, echo and reverberation in this room, which has a solid wood floor, I've got some foam that's going to be hung up on the wall behind me and on the side walls too. Hopefully that'll help that a little bit. So, and then also I just wanted to drop, for those that are still listening to the show here an hour later, thank you very much. But please follow at ABC Scoop over on Twitter. We've been trying to build that following a little bit and we retweet all of our little show, post announcements. So we'll let you know there when and where to watch the show and listen to the show every week. So yeah, we'll see you next week. Until next week, you can tune in Alphabet Scoop here every week. We can record this podcast every Wednesday, except today, and which is, yeah, whatever. It's pointless saying every Wednesday at this point. We publish on Thursday mornings, 10-2, and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks to Adam for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.